Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Damon made it a big battle. Hey, everybody. It is Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this episode. Before we get started on today's topic, and the date is very significant for today. If you're listening to this on the day it is published, August 14th, you will have 3 days to get in your new music picks for July. I want to thank those who've already sent them in. And for anyone who hasn't but is planning to, you still got time. You still got 3 or 4 days to get that in. So we're looking forward to starting new music for July next week. And following that, we should be queuing up some episodes from Suburbs Fest. Really looking forward to doing that as well. All right. With that out of the way, today is the 30th anniversary of a musical event that has been dubbed the Battle of Britpop. The Battle of Britpop was a significant event in the mid-90s, primarily involving two leading bands, Blur and Oasis. This rivalry peaked on August 14th, 1995, when both bands released singles on the same day, igniting a fierce competition for the top spot in the UK charts. It's true, folks. On that day, August 14th, 1995, 30 years ago, Blur released Country House and Oasis released Roll With It. I've taken the time to compile a little bit of information on this story, and I used two main sources in addition to checking some facts here on the source of all human knowledge. There was a story published in August 2019 in the New Musical Express, NME, entitled Blur and Oasis's Big Britpop Chart Battle, the definitive story of what really happened. And then I found an article in Dig magazine that was published in August of 2021 entitled Blur versus Oasis, the true story behind the Battle of Britpop. So those are the two main sources I used, primarily getting quotes from people that were there and involved in the events of this time. And also just using those sources to compile a loose narrative of it. We're not going to go in depth here, but we are going to skim the main details, and hopefully you'll enjoy recounting the story. The competition was not only about music. There was also a slight cultural element to this battle, if you will, somewhat reflecting the cultural divides in Britain. Oasis were generally considered a more working-class band from Manchester, and Blur considered, anyway, more middle-class art school kids from London. This rivalry was heavily covered by the media, and it captured public interest, and it became a defining moment in British music and pop culture. I think, to some degree, the label that Blur got probably was a bit unfair, but it certainly conveniently fit a narrative pitting these two bands against each other. Quote, you couldn't turn on a news program without it being featured. Andy Ross, co-founder of Blur's label Food Records, recalled in a 2015 New Musical Express interview, my missus dad lives in Norway, and the Oslo Times had it on the front cover that week. If it was front page news in Norway, it was probably front page news all around the world. Even America took notice. It was a focal point for a generation. Here is some very brief background about how the bands got to where they were in 1995. Oasis played their first gig on August 14th, coincidentally, 1991 at the Boardwalk Club in Manchester. They signed to Creation in mid-1993 and released their first single, Supersonic, in April of 1994. Their debut album, Definitely Maybe, came out in the late summer of 1994 and established them as stars. Blur, who played under another name previously, signed their first contract with Food Records in 1990 and released their first single, She's So High, late that year. Their debut album, Leisure, was released to mixed reviews in 1991. After a frustrating U.S. tour, the band underwent an ideological and image shift intended to celebrate their British heritage in contrast to the popularity of American grunge music. This led to the release of Modern Life is Rubbish in May of 1993. In April of 1994, they scored a commercial and artistic success with Park Life, which debuted at number one in the UK. As 1995 progressed, it gradually became clear there was growing resentment between the two Britpop behemoths. Stephen Sunderland, who was then editor of the NME, said, "Oasis didn't think that Blur were proper rock stars, and Blur really didn't give two figs what Oasis thought of anything." Damon Albarn, Blur singer, said, "No one was having a go at Oasis on our side. I mean, I did that thing on Chris Evans' show when I said it sounds a bit like Status Quo, but that was the only thing. It was all on their side." Alan McGee, owner of Creation Records, said, "Damon had come to a party for Oasis having a number one single for some might say, their first number one. Liam went up to Damon saying, 'We're number one, you're not, you're not.' And Damon got one on about it and decided to take Oasis on. Oasis, being Oasis, decided to hate them. And Blur, being Blur, thought it was a game. But Oasis actually hated them at the time." Damon Albarn again, "When Oasis got to number one with Some Might Say, I went to their celebration party, you know, just to say well done. And Liam came over and he's like, 'Number fucking one,' right in my face. So I thought, okay, we'll see." Britpop in general encouraged competitiveness, so it didn't take much for Noel and Damon to rise to it. Blur's publisher Mike Smith said of the events that led to Blur versus Oasis spilling out into the press and public consciousness, "Both wanted to be the biggest band in the country. So much was made in the media of posh Southern kids and rough working class Northerners. It was ridiculous, as none of the Blur boys came from those places. It was more of a clash between art school traditions and Oasis's classic British R&B. Despite Oasis's attitude, it was Blur who threw down the gauntlet in what became known as the Battle of Britpop. When Damon Albarn deliberately moved the release of Country House, the first single from Blur's forthcoming The Great Escape album, to clash with the release of Oasis's Roll With It." Alan McGee recalled, "We were going to go the week after them, I believe, and they were going to go the week before us. Damon moved it, so we went head to head. Damon made it a big battle. Damon and I had this chat," Andy Ross said. "I said, 'Look, if we go the week after, we're number two. If we go the same week, we maybe have a chance of number one.' So we looked at each other. Damon seemed up for it, and we thought, well, let's go head to head, go for broke. From a journalistic point of view, it was a godsend. It was like a clash of titans, the Beatles and the Stones all over again," Ross continued, "although I don't think the Beatles and Stones ever competed for a number one single." In picking the first singles from their forthcoming albums, Blur went with Country House and a Benny Hill indebted video, while Oasis chose the solid meat and potatoes rock and roll of Roll With It. All right, it's time to get to the music, folks. Now remember, it's 30 years later, we're all benefiting from hindsight. But here's Oasis doing Roll With It.
Anybody
Okay, there it is. Released on August 14th, 1995. And it's Competition, released on the same day. Country House by Blur.
I've got a lot of money. Caught in a rat race terminally. I'm a professional cynic, but my heart's not in it. I'm paying the price of living life at the limit. Caught up in the centuries, anxiety. Yes, it weighs on him. It's getting better. Trying to sit for. Lives in a house, very big house in the country. Watching afternoon repeats and the food he eats in the country. He takes a manner of pills and piles up analyst bills in the country. Oh, it's like an animal farm, that's a rural charm in the country. He's got morning glory and life's a different story. Everything's going Jack and Jory. In touch with his own mortality. He's reading balls and looking back. It's a helping hand that makes you feel blind. Blind. Oh, it's a century's remedy for the pain that haunts. Start trying simple. Lives in a house, a very big house in the country. He's got a fog in his chest, so he needs a lot of rest in the country. He doesn't drink, smoke, laugh, takes herbal baths in the country. She comes to no harm on the animal farm in the country. In the country. In the country.
Blur's publisher, Stephen Smith, thinks it was ironic that the two songs that caused such big attention were not good examples of what Blur and Oasis were capable of. He said, Country House pandered to a certain aspect of Blur's music and made it to be the predominant sound. NME editor Sutherland said, we produced two front covers because we didn't know who was going to win, and our press deadlines were difficult. So we had a Blur one and an Oasis one, and we just waited to see which one would go. It did feel like people were going into record stores and buying a record to try to beat another record, which is amazing. And that's a great point. You have to remember, this was in the age before streaming, so you did have to get your butt down to a record shop and physically purchase this if you wanted to, number one, help your favorite band, but number two, hear the new songs. Well, once they came out, it was the best week for UK single sales in a decade. And amid claims that Oasis sales were hampered by faulty barcodes, which Alan McGee later said he didn't think had a sizable impact, Blur pipped Oasis by 270,000 to 220,000. Over the following months, Britpop became a major cultural phenomenon. Meanwhile, as What's the Story Morning Glory emerged to colossal sales, it became clear that while Blur had won the battle, Oasis were winning the war. We'll give the last word here to Alan McGee. Morning Glory definitely sold because we got the coverage. We were on the national news. We went on and sold 21 million worldwide with Morning Glory. Oasis were building in their way, but whether we would have got the national exposure without that Blur Oasis moment, I have my doubts. Did I think it was stupid? Yes. Do I think it worked? Unbelievably. Am I glad it happened? Completely. Three things define the Britpop age. It was that moment, the Nebworth concert, and then Princess Diana dying killed the moment. We'd put out Be Here Now, Diana died, and the country went off Britpop. Those were the three stages of Britpop. And that's according to Alan McGee. Who was there? Yes, very much so. So there you go, folks. The 30th anniversary of the Battle of Britpop. We wanted to take an episode and mark that. I don't know which one you liked better. I don't know which one you bought. I'm sure Stephen Routledge was there, and he may have bought them both on that day. I don't know, but it would be great to find out, and hopefully we will. With that, We will sign off for today. We'll have another episode for your Friday tomorrow, and then we'll get into new music from July next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And why don't you go listen to some Blur or Oasis? While you do, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Number fucking one.